The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And for those of you that may have tuned in Friday, you heard me say that we would have a cyber version of the show today. But unfortunately, Mr. AI Wynn was called into duty again late last night and is not able to join us. So we'll be doing a typical Be a Planner show like on Friday, where we talk about real estate taxation, some tax strategies, maybe a syndication. I'm still debating on whether we'll have time. There's been more than a few that have come out, but you know, we're glad to see the market starting to thaw when it comes to some of the other debt options. All that said, there's still risk if you don't understand what you're signing up for, which is essentially what we consult with our clients on, so that they understand, hey, this is what the pro forma data that you're being given shows. Is that what you thought you were signing up for? Meaning, do you think you're getting distributions every year? Or do you think maybe the distributable funds are going to be held for a period and then distributions offered later in the partnership life or existence? Those are important things if you're talking about retirement age, where, you know, you're counting on those distributions. You may be like me, where, you know, I haven't started my Social Security yet and would like to hold off an additional couple years before I pull the trigger. And in the case where if I wasn't continuing to work, it'd be important to know, well, what's the timing on distributions and how will they occur? Meaning, when revenues hit a certain level and therefore our net operating income attains a certain level, or is it contingent on us as a partnership being able to refinance the property that we purchased? What are the mechanisms that are going to allow that cash flow to filter down to the passive investors? And in any event, so if you don't have existing advisors to help you with these topics that I mentioned, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com, and if you'll look there at the top towards the right, second link from the right, there's a forms link, and if you'll go to that forms link, you'll see that step one, form one, is a client profile that if you will help make us aware of your particular details, facts, circumstances, etc., that will allow us to determine how we might be able to add even more value to the standard services you might otherwise seek, and enable us to perhaps look at some family entities as you get started with your private partnership investing. And that can have a number of benefits for your family currently and down the road, just depending on your other details. For those of you that might be looking to utilize your retirement funds, if you'll go ahead and go to step two, you'll see a retirement profile. And if you can give us that information, that'll allow me to tell you, hey, here's how you can access those funds or maybe not access them. Depends on your specific facts and circumstances. And then the third step is if you, and again, I would suggest you fill out at least the first three, but if you can only do one, number one, the client profile is the most important for us. And unfortunately, it's the longest form. That form may take you 20, 25 minutes, maybe less, depends on how much you're already invested. And but steps two and three are very quick, shouldn't take but several minutes. And then step four would be it's not a step four. It's a step three, part A and B. I've got individual and business taxes. So if both apply to you, please complete both. Otherwise, just the individual tax reporting profile. And again, we're going to ask, part of the process will be getting copies of your prior tax returns. We can get you to upload those to a encrypted document management portal, which we'll provide you free of charge. But, you know, it's not just having the tax returns that tells us enough to understand what you're about. That's the reason the client profile is so long. There's many things that are not provided in a tax return. And as an example, you may recall when the media was all over Mr. Trump to release his tax returns, that at one point they got leaked to the press. And where did all the noise go? You know, all the press that thought, aha, now we got him. You know, the tax returns don't show anywhere near the totality of a business or an individual investor, et cetera. And I was not surprised at all that all the clamor was over nothing, because, in fact, I think Trump strung it along unnecessarily, but to suit his purposes. And, you know, it's interesting how the uproar just almost melted right away. And it's because most in the media don't understand taxes, and I guess didn't feel compelled to pay outside sources. Maybe they did. Maybe the outside sources leveled with them early on and said, hey, you know, what are you expecting to get out of this? And then when they told them, they were made aware that, oh, that's not something we can get out of a tax return. You'd have to have a lot more information about that company, et cetera. But anyway, so yeah, if you don't mind, at least fill out the first form. And if you've got the willingness to fill out numbers two and three, steps two and three, then we'll be able to talk in more complete. We'll have more complete answers to some of the questions you may want to ask us during that call. And speaking of that call, you can go to the rightmost link on that same homepage and schedule a call with us, and be happy to explain to you how we might be able to help you, or maybe not. Depends on what your objectives are. In any event, I wanted to speak just a bit today about the concept of the real estate private partnership syndication and why it represents a really, I think, outstanding way to achieve above average rates of return while remaining passive. And I was talking to an individual yesterday that is actively self-employed, and I was mentioning the fact that, you know, apartments or multifamily acquisition is really something that most lay people should consider if they're behind on their retirement savings, because those investments historically tend to return above average rates of return. And, you know, the response was, well, you know, I just don't have time to go run real estate. You know, the calls, the phone calls, the problems that you run into, I just can't do it. And it would take away too much from my business, or even if you didn't have your own business, your job. And by the way, you know, I hear others on the air, on the radio, act like that a job is not something you should be proud of, your successful job, or get gratification from. And I just totally, vehemently disagree with that. If you like your job, if you get satisfaction, you shouldn't be diminished in our culture. If anything, you should be applauded because you're part of the solution to the problem that we have right now with running out of money in Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, in case you've lost track, those are the two big deductions that get taken out of your paycheck every paycheck period or every pay cycle. And we're talking big time deduction. And now, as I mentioned on the show this past Friday, just 2 days ago, the cap on Social Security takeout is now over $170,000. That's crazy. How many of you hadn't looked at that lately and noticed how much that's gone up since the good old days? I don't know, the first 10 or 15 years of my working for myself. I mean, it's crazy how much money gets taken out of our paychecks. It exceeds the income tax for most of those. I think if you're making less than, you know, $80,000 or $90,000, I forget where the break is, because it keeps moving up as you get more and more FICA and Medicare taken out. Medicare has been taken out now on the entirety of your paycheck for quite some time, and I would submit that we're probably just a few years away, maybe not even. In fact, had Biden's, I believe, the Build Back Better Act, it may not have had it in it at the end, but I believe it had the provision to go ahead and take the cap off of the Social, or the ceiling off the Social Security withholding, and let it be on just like Medicare, where it's based on your entire paycheck, which at a hefty 6.45% would be your share. I believe I've got my numbers right. It's 12.9 between the employer and the employee. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And like I say, the income tax is less of a withholding amount for those that are not over a certain amount. I want to say it's in the 80s or 90s. It may be higher now. It just depends on how much your standard deduction is, you know, if you're single or married, filing joint, head of household, et cetera. And, but I would tell you that one of the solutions that will be trotted out, it's got some bipartisan support, unfortunately, will be taking that cap off of Social Security. And it's not much of a fix. It's really very little when you look at the sad state of affairs of the Social Security Trust Fund, which will be exhausted by, I believe, it's early 2030s, if I remember right. Medicare happens ahead of that. I think it's later here in 2020s. But in any event, something's got to change, and it's probably going to be a combination of things, including the taxes that we pay as taxpayers. And I'm not referring necessarily to income tax, although I am, because the income tax component is what's really got to be changed to head off continued increase in the amount of the federal debt, the cumulative federal deficit, which is very close to $37 trillion. And again, as I've said many times, that's just the part that we will admit to. That's not the total. The total is much higher when you look at the mandated but unfunded portions of our tax code or revenue code, whatever you want to refer to it as, the collections that we're going to, well, we're going to collect receipts and pay out to the various funds that come out of the federal budget, and most of them mandated. There's very little discretionary portion of the federal budget remaining, and that will be exhausted by 2029, maybe earlier, but 2029, 2030 at the absolute latest, although as interest rates continue to stay up. And by the way, rates are not going down anytime soon, excuse me, because we've borrowed so much money, we have to print more money to have much more money to borrow. The savings rate has declined, and it's only from savings that the capital is created to be borrowed through the debt market, I guess the bond market, which is not doing well right now. And it's crazy how that the bond market in large measure will dictate our economic success. And as there's fewer dollars to be borrowed by the government, that keeps rates up at a high level. And so the quote good old days of yesteryear, I want to say there's some artificial pressure on the market with the government, you know, flooding the market with, let's say, cheap money. I don't know that we'll ever see that again in our lifetime, or at least my lifetime. You know, I'm 65, older than I'm sure many of the listeners, but there would be have to be some magical new GDP tree. You know, if we could grow three or four times the GDP, well then, okay, all things are on a solid footing again. But that's probably not going to happen. And here we're currently at about 150 to 160% of our debt to GDP, again, depending on which economist you want to stipulate has the right set of facts. But whether we're there or not now, we will be within the next 10 years, because we're currently borrowing $6 billion a day. And that's only going to go up. And, you know, it's a torrid pace that we've been on. Let's do this. I went past the break time. Let's go ahead and take our first break. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, You can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I wanted to continue the discussion on the debt and deficit and the problem we've got with future taxes, future expenditures of the government, what it's going to do to us, what we as individuals can do to thwart, in large measure, the impact. I mean, if you think, as we sit here today, that taxes are not going to go up, you're essentially saying you don't, you don't believe in math. It's just math. It's not a question of what we're going to do better, more efficient. You know, if you're Doge, yeah, Doge could wipe out the or reduce the speed of us going off the cliff. The reality is we cannot continue to spend $2 trillion a year more than what we collect, which is what we've been doing, and it's what we're projected to do for the next 10 years in the current Congressional Budget Office 10-year forecast that gets updated every year, and in fact gets updated some during the year. And I understand, you know, Doge has cut, in fact, the U.S. debt clock at usdebtclock.org now has a section for the Doge cuts where it projects the let me pull this up. I'm curious if that number is an annual thing. I don't think it is. I think, I believe it's a one-time because it's showing at the moment there's been, well, I guess, you know, you think about it, it depends on what's being cut. If it's part of the annual expenditure, well, then absolutely it should be looked at as, you know, each year type savings. But anyway, the Doge clock at the moment, this is in the top left corner. If you do have a chance to pull up the usdebtclock.org, and you could even do it on your cell. They've got a mobile app for it. But the Doge clock is sitting at $510 billion year to date. Not bad for a few months' work, huh? And savings per taxpayer, that's per taxpayer now, not per citizen, is $4,544. So good work. We hope that somehow it continues. We hope or at least I hope that Mr. Trump and Mr. Musk will iron out their differences. As I said on the Friday show, Mr. Trump is not one that won't allow second chances. I heard him say once on TV, I can't remember if it was in the context of a debate. I think it was one of the interviews he's done since becoming president 47. They were questioning, the interviewer was questioning, well, you know, you've gotten back together with somebody that had left his administration earlier, and they said, what gives with that? They said, do you give a second chance in most cases? And he goes, oh, yeah, I'll give anybody a second chance. I might even give you a third chance, but there's no fourth chances. Nobody gets a fourth chance. And I thought, you know, that is classic Trump, because he's very pragmatic, and I don't think he's either unintelligent or insensitive enough to what Musk represents to our economy, to our nation as a whole, and more importantly, maybe in Trump's world, to the other side of the political spectrum. Although I think that would be a real reach, because if you think the other side of the political spectrum is going to be any friend to billionaires, at least overtly, under the radar, they are definitely taking care of their wealthy donors. There's no question. But in any event, if you look at the totality of our annual budget, and you'll realize real quick what I'm saying when the discretionary portion has almost disappeared. You've got the top four components are Medicare and Medicaid combined. That's $1.6 trillion. Social Security is another $1.5 roughly. Defense, well, let's talk about the third highest components. Interest on the debt, that's over $1 trillion now. Think about that. Over $1 trillion a year in interest on the debt. And the last component is defense, which is 0.9. Okay, and so that is approximately $5 trillion if you add up just the top four components. How much are we collecting each year? It's right at $5 trillion, maybe 5.1, 5.2. I think that number is tracked out here as well. Let's see. Gosh, there's a lot of numbers on this website. It's like a pinball machine where everything's just flying by. I'll see if I can't capture that with my eye as I'm talking. But collectively, for the whole year, it's roughly $7.1 trillion is the current year collectible that we anticipate, you know, based on taxes, tariffs, fees. I mean, it's everything coming in. But in any event, there's a $2 trillion gap. Again, the CBO 10-year forecast shows it all the way out to 2035, and that's only because they stopped counting after the 10-year mark. It would be longer, I'm assuming. I think there's actually 1 year in that 10 years upcoming that it drops below the $2 trillion mark just for 1 year, and then, of course, it gets soaked back up in a year following. But it's a sad tell, sad story to tell, and I don't, you know, it's hard for me to even fathom how that amount of money gets paid back. And I'm rooting for Mr. Trump to do everything he's talked about in terms of monetization of our underutilized assets. I mean, there's no question we've got oil and gas, significant oil and gas reserves. We've also got real estate. I think it's number I've seen most recently is somewhere north of 14,000 empty office buildings. And I don't know, that may have changed a bit under Trump, but it's a big number. And so in any event, you know, the problem isn't going away. And, you know, it's interesting that people often overlook, they don't think about the individual state budgets and deficits. And yes, most states are deficits. There may be half a dozen that are positive. And the state debt is another $1.7 trillion approximately, collectively, over and above the national debt. So it's just incredible the amount of money that collectively we're up against. Oh, okay. Here's the federal tax revenue this year, $5.15 trillion. The spending is, $7.158 trillion. So you've got a differential there of 2.01 approximately trillion dollars. So what do we do besides bemoan the sad state of affairs? You know, we can complain. Americans are great at complaining. I see that all the time here overseas. You know, you can almost tell by how loud the discussion is in a dispute in the public transportation arena or a restaurant or whatever. You can almost tell if an American is involved by the volume level. It's sad to say. My wife accuses me of being part of that problem, but, you know, I'm calm compared to many. But in any event, complaints are dependent on the old expression, whose ox is getting gored? And that's going to determine who's really the biggest culprit. You look at the U.S. aid discussion, and boy, it didn't take long at all before all the parties that were taking full advantage of the graft that was coming out of that program came to the front, because they were complaining about how unfair it was to cut out the aid that was going to their favorite programs. But in any event, so again, I'll ask the question, what do we do? And there's differences in what you can do if you're an employee getting a W-2 versus having the luxury, and I'm going to call it a luxury because there's so many positive benefits to being self-employed. And I've probably got some self-employed listeners that are saying, huh? Wait a minute, Nathan, are you not aware that I have to pay the self-employment tax? You know, which is they have to pay their own FICA and Medicare. And I point out, well, yes, I understand that issue, but I also understand something maybe you don't yet understand, which is the amount of money you can sock away in a self-directed 401k, otherwise known in the marketing world as a solo K. And I'm curious if you really know how much we can put away. It's a striking, absolutely striking number for those of us that are 50 and over. It's, I believe it's 70 for 2025. It is 70. I'm sorry. Yes, 77 thousand, I think it's 77,300. Let me confirm. Let's see here. I hate looking at the IRS site because they make it so hard to find the number. Let's see. Well, let's just say it's 70,000. I'm not going to decipher this page that quickly. And that's for those that are over age of 50. If you're under age 50, it's $7,000 or $8,000 less. Again, I don't have that number at the at my tip of my brain here, but I'm just curious how many self-employed folks know that that's how much they can contribute, and if they and that's provided they have the net income base to support that now, the taxable net income base. And then you can double that number if you've got a spouse that you're employing in the business. That's huge. You think about catching up on your retirement savings, you can catch up in a hurry. I mean, if you've got a successful consulting practice, you're a lawyer, you're a CPA, you're a consultant, you're a realtor, there's a number of professions that you know, can net some serious income against which they can start a plan if they qualify. You know, one of the big qualifications is you can only have one full-time employee. Unless you're married, then you and your spouse count as one. But it's a considerable benefit. Now think about, on the other hand, you're having to pay the SE tax. That number is a one-time hit for each year, whereas the 77 is building. You know, theoretically, you've got it in an account that allows you to self-direct it, which is the way we set these plans up, and you become the trustee, you become the administrator. You're also a participant, and you decide who, when, and how much to invest your money with. And that leads in to another reason why we like the private partnership syndication market. And I'm going to say we like it, and for people that are my age or even younger, maybe you've got the ideal job. You love your job. You have no intent at all of becoming disenchanted with your job. As one of the platforms, the Self-Made Millionaire, refers to the cubicle, I guess the rat cubicle, or it's a rat treadmill. You're spinning around on the treadmill. You know, that may be his experience. He was employed with a big company at one time. Maybe that was his experience. I don't want to say it wasn't. And if it was the experience, I can understand why all the negativity towards those of us that had happy experiences being employed. I had a great job when I left it at age 25 or 24, actually, because I had a better opportunity. It wasn't that I disliked necessarily working for a big international CPA firm. I just wanted what I saw. You know, the grass always looks greener, especially when you're 24, right? And don't know better. If I'd been 54, I probably wouldn't have left, even though I was very fortunate. Everything turned out roses and buttercups, I guess. Is that the expression? In our case, I had a partner that left the big firm same time with me. And we were loving life, and we never looked back. And as luck would have it, you know, our choice was good. It was good timing, and it was a good option. And so But again, I look at people, I've got clients, I've had many clients that when we first started our practice, you know, I was 24, we had clients that were in their late 50s, and I watched them get into retirement. They worked for companies like Bechtel or Exxon or Shell, you know, a lot of large companies. They were not necessarily top executives. We had a couple VP level clients within that or within those companies, but you know, they just showed up for work every day. They made the maximum 401 contributions they could make. They turn around with $2.5-3 million when they retired. There's nothing wrong with that. If you are behind on your retirement savings, and by a virtue of getting into some self-directed 401k investments and real estate private partnerships, I think you might be pretty happy if you could end up at $2-3 million by the time you need to start living off your retirement funds. Now, again, you know, I hear a lot of talk on Self-Made Millionaires platform about how, you know, you don't want a 401k because you only pay it. It doesn't pay you. Well, that's old school knowledge base talking. That's not the self-directed 401k. That's the big company 401k. And I don't necessarily disagree with his logic on that front. He's just not telling you the whole story. Just like there's many other topics on that platform that you're not getting the whole story about, which in some cases it's good. If you got the whole story, you might not take the step that you need to take to move forward. And you do need to move forward to get into the private partnership investment arena. And it's an unbelievable option for lay people like you and I, to invest our money in projects that heretofore, excuse me, only private equity or Wall Street type money could participate in. And interestingly, now there's a lot of Wall Street private equity money in the multifamily space. There wasn't back 20 years ago when I first became familiar with this asset class and started consulting in it. But in any event, you know, we've talked about some of the reasons we like this space. One, it's got a above average rate of return historically. Still some issues out there in current projects. There's still some debt structures that are challenging the pro forma outcomes. Many transactions have already gone under, and there's still some to come here in 2025. I don't think it's reached the peak of what could go wrong. That said, new transactions and even some existing transactions, if they can raise more capital to stem the tide of the rate cost, the interest rate cost, it still can be a successful deal, but it's going to be more successful for somebody walking up today and joining that transaction, or a new transaction that's pro forma a higher debt service load than deals that were put out in 2020 to 2023. But I would suggest to you, again, look around, show me where you can, again, historically generate, you know, cumulative annual returns in the 10 to 20, maybe as much as 30% range, which will do a lot to help you make up the ground on having an adequate retirement fund. And, you know, you might want to think about the fact that with the medical advances that have been made, our average life expectancy has gone up. Even the IRS tables have females with a life expectancy of 87 to 88 years, us males 85 to 86. And that's a long time if you're in your mid to late 50s, even in your 60s. That's a long time to pay for your living cost in retirement. So if you think you've got, I don't know what you think you have, but I know most people, when I ask the question, well, how much money do you have saved for retirement? And they lead with the gross number. And what do I mean when I say the gross number? I'm referring to how much do you have before you pay your partner? And I'm not referring to your spouse. I guess in some cases it might be. But I'm referring to your silent partner, the IRS. Because if you've got pre-tax retirement funds, which I think in large measure is what most people still working have, because they fall prey to that little piece of the IV bag, if you will, that gives you a deduction for that contribution that you make, not realizing how transient that benefit is. And I would argue, hey, it's far more effective economically, and I can show you this with projections, for you to give up that, I don't know what bracket you're in, 20 to maybe on the high end. We've got some listeners that are in the 30 to 37% bracket. But in any event, that's a one-time hit on that drug and that IV bag. And I'm going to suggest to you the rest of your life, every year of getting tax-free earnings into that plan and been able to pull out tax-free distributions when you want to. There are no RMDs or required minimum distributions for the Roth accounts. Think about that. It's a big deal. And it's an especially big deal when you're earning above average rates of return already. Not that you, I mean, you also get to avoid current taxation with a pre-tax self-directed 401 trust component, but you are still subject to the RMDs, the required minimum distributions. And of course, that affects not just your income tax, that affects the taxation of your Social Security. It affects taxation as evidenced by the IRMA premiums, the indexed premium levels for your Medicare. And it's, you know, both of which are avoided with Roth accounts. You don't have an impact on your Social Security taxation or your IRMA premiums with Roth accounts. So we like a combination. It's as if the planets have aligned over the past, oh, I'd say 5 to 10 years in some cases, because these different rules have all kind of converged to where the Roth, if it was premium before, which it was, now it's the ultimate way to invest in real estate, period. Not just real estate that your retirement funds can invest in. Yes, that's also the premier or the ultimate way. But I'm talking about if you had money sitting in a money market account or the stock market, your challenge is to figure out how to get that money into a self-directed 401. And in most cases, you can't. That's why it's good to have balances already in your 401s. It's the trade-off for having made the wrong decision to save with the 401. And that was a, I don't want to call it a scam by Congress, but it was a way to offload the funding for our collective American public's retirement years onto the taxpayers' shoulders. Each individual taxpayer became responsible for saving for retirement instead of the large companies picking up the tab. And of course, it's not necessarily true with the government. The government still funds a lot of their employees' retirement plans. They do have some 401-like plans that, you know, offload. But in large measure, the government pensions are some, they've gone from being some of the least luxurious plans years ago to now being the most desirable in some cases. But, you know, again, you work with what you have. And if you've got money in a 401, don't beat yourself up. Take advantage of the rules. Let's exploit the rules and get you into a Roth, either an IRA or a 401. There are reasons in the real estate private partnership syndication arena, while the 401 is more advantageous. Now, that said, it's got requirements that you have to meet. But if you qualify, there's some issues that are more desirable if it's 401 money versus Roth IRA money. And one thing is the unrelated debt financed income tax that you'll pay if you invest in these syndications that have debt. Well, that's every syndication has debt. So if you're investing your pre-tax 401 funds, you're going to pay if you invest with your Roth IRA funds in syndicated partnerships, you're going to pay that UDFI tax, which can be somewhat punitive in the years that you have gains. The top rate of 37%, you hit that at about $14,000 of taxable income. So it's not a fun thing. On the other hand, it beats ripping the Band-Aid off and paying tax on 100% of your retirement funds, which is what I hear self-made millionaire and other mentors suggest is the way to get rid of the man, so to speak. But in any event, 401 funds are exempt from the UDFI. That's a big deal in the syndicated private partnership space. But in any event, you know, if you have questions about these options, that's what we consult on. Let me know. We'll have a phone call, no charge, to find out where you're at and let you know how we can help. Okay, well, we're at the end of the show once again, and we appreciate you joining us, and we'll be back here this coming Friday at 11 a.m. right here on 700 a.m. KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Ooh.